and welcome back, and thanks for listening. I'm Jason Middleton, and this is Techonomics. Alexander Pope dropped an essay on criticism back in 1711, and in that essay, a quote for the ages: "To err is human, to forgive divine, all people commit sins and make mistakes." And I would argue that refers to self-sabotage as well, choices that humans make over and over in a cycle of limiting potential and fomenting crises. Or
the point of self-sabotage is to keep you living in a very familiar kind of cycle of life. And when I say familiar, that doesn't mean to say you necessarily like it.
Right.
Or you're okay with it. It just means that this life that you find yourself kind of stuck in is the one you know best, so you'll stick to it in a subconscious level.
That's Gary John Bishop. He's the author of the new book, Stop Doing That Bleep, or Stop Doing That S, A Real World Approach to Reducing Negative Behavior and Waking the Heck Up. His prior book, a New York Times bestseller, is titled Un-F Yourself. It's a little off our usual script, I dig, but Gary's a great speaker, and his approach can be helpful. We also veer into the novel and film Trainspotting towards the end of the chat, and he finds a few cautionary tales that translate beyond Scottish drug culture of the 90s and relates them to some of today's drug troubles. Okay, let's get to it.
All right, my name is Gary John Bishop. I'm a personal development expert. I've written two books, Unfuck Yourself and Stop Doing That or Unbleep Yourself and Stop Doing That Bleep.
Right. I was going to tell you, my producer is off this week, and so since I'm going to be self-producing this one, I'm going to limit my bleeping as much as I possibly can.
Perfect.
Hey, well, anyway, let's jump back in. You mentioned your first book, which was a New York Times bestseller, Unfuck Yourself. How did you get from that book to this book, Stop Doing That? What's the differentiator?
All right. So in the first book, I really talked about the idea of how much you're run by your internal dialogue. And it was a very kind of insightful book for a lot of people and allowed for a lot of people to kind of wake up to the degree to which they're drifting along in their own internal stream of thoughts. And the second book, I actually go way into it. I actually dig into uncover your own personal brand of self-sabotage. Like, what is it specifically about yours? And where is it taking you? And it's a real deep dive into your own kind of subconscious programming.
Yeah. That's what I took away from it, too, because I am a competition level self-saboteur, but I'm also just about to turn 50. And so I find that my role is slowing down on self-sabotage as I get a little bit older. Who were you aiming this book at? Is it somewhere along an emotional spectrum, or is it just kind of a catch-all?
It's such a personal thing, self-sabotage. Some things we're doing it in really little ways. Some things we're doing it in really big ways. You know, people are like drinking too much or, you know, whatever they're doing in their life or like, you know, going through a slew of friendships or love relationships. But some things is little things. Some things is like, you know, I know I shouldn't do this, but just this once. Or I know I should do this, but I'll just skip it this couple of times. But they all add up. Even those little elements of self-sabotage are adding up to something.
Right.
And the question that I was always fascinated by, and I answer unequivocally in this book, is what is it actually adding up to? Like, where is it taking you?
Okay. So it's more like it is like a trajectory, right? Because yesterday I personally had the extra glass of wine before bed and did not get on the treadmill like I was supposed to in the afternoon.
Right.
I mean, these things are kind of like sedimentary, right? They just kind of add up.
Right. Very good. So it's well spotted. So the point of self-sabotage is to keep you living in a very familiar kind of cycle of life. And when I say familiar, that doesn't mean to say you necessarily like it.
Right.
Or you're okay with it. It just means that this life that you find yourself kind of stuck in is the one you know best, so you'll stick to it in a subconscious level. And it's very eye-opening when you see all those little pieces add up and you start to get the point of them, because there is a point to them.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Okay, help me understand something. What's the dynamic like here? How much of this self-realization stuff should be envisioning a future for ourselves, and how much of it should be like being haunted by the ghosts of our past or the mistakes of our past?
All right. So I think what you got to do is you got to reconcile both for yourself. At a very kind of fundamental level, we get interested in the future to fix something from the past or overcome something. Whether you're aware of that or not, it's irrelevant. That's exactly what it's about. It's about getting to some day in the future when this turns out for you. So it's, you got to be a little two-handed about it. That is, you got to be able to look at the past in such a way, and I don't just mean off the top of your head in 2 minutes. I mean, do the work in your past,
like right.
start to kind of put it in a place where it works for you. And then, you definitely have to turn your eyes towards the future, but not necessarily to get there. It's more like turn your eyes towards the future and the life you say you want, to enliven the life you have. That is it changing your actions? Are you doing different things today because you're now so invested in this future? That's ultimately what it's all about.
Okay. Gary John Bishop, this level of emotional excavation, daunting, I think would be a good word for this. What are your suggestions when it comes to like letting yourself be comfortable doing this excavation?
One of the things that we can sometimes do, and I've met many people in my career, they become a little too fascinated with themselves. So it ends up becoming this like never ending exercise in picking fluff out your belly button. You do this work very specifically to provide something, you know. So for instance, my second book is part of a greater body. There's three books to follow. But this book had to be written, but you're right. It's uncomfortable, but it's a piece, right? It's a piece of a greater thing for you in your life. So doing this excavation, digging in there, it can be uncomfortable, it can be painful. But, you know, anything that upsets the paradigm that you might find yourself stuck in is completely necessary. And everything I write and everything that I do is designed to be a major interruption to some of the patterns that one gets stuck in.
Okay, a couple of things in that answer right there. You mentioned paradigm. So if you're talking about a self-induced paradigm shift of a human being, when human beings are really good at pattern recognition and comfort in patterns, boy, that's real. That's not ripping off the Band-Aid. That's more like re-breaking your arm so you can reset the bone, right?
Yeah, well, it can. I think there are times when it seems like that to people. Obviously, that's not really happening, but it seems like that to people. Remember, look, people talk about things like self-limiting beliefs, right? But for your average human being, and which basically means for everybody, you don't know your own self-limiting beliefs. You might see somebody else. But to you, they're not self-limiting beliefs. To you, they're true. Like, this is true.
Right.
And it's only ever true depending on where you're looking from. And ultimately, a paradigm shift for somebody is to find themselves located in another spot where they look at the life from a whole other angle. And when you look at it from that angle, you see a landscape of different stuff, of considerations, of context, of understanding that you could never see from that old position.
Okay, I have one quick off-topic question for you. Because you're from Glasgow, Scotland, I'm fascinated with the book and the movie Trainspotting. What is your take on Trainspotting as a Glaswegian?
Well, I think there's, like many places in the world, there's this undercurrent of society that's really struggling and really, you know, like really grappling with life itself. But there's a real like down in the dirt cynicism, you know, I think with people in our lives if we let ourselves get in touch with it. And so Trainspotting was the cynicism on loudspeaker. But then again, these little triumphs and little bits of hope sprinkled in there. So, yeah, there's a gritty realism, but not even just for Scotland. I think many parts of the world, you'll see young people stuck in those kinds of behaviors and cultural traps. And it can be really painful to watch.
I have to agree with you on that. And I tell you what, I don't want to stereotype Glasgow or Scotland in that lens. I just want to reiterate that that's just something that stood out to me as a cultural touchstone in my past. Okay, so I'm definitely not trying to stereotype in any way.
For sure. In fact, that kind of behavior, by the way, is becoming more and more prevalent in rural societies. So it's not even in like big cities anymore. It's more like little towns scattered all over the place with massive drug problems.
Yes. Absolutely. Gary John Bishop, this has been my pleasure. Great new book. Good luck with it. And I hope we can talk again soon.
Awesome, Jason. Thanks so much for having me on your show.
That was Gary John Bishop. He is the author of the new book, Stop Doing That S, A Real World Approach to Reducing Negative Behavior and Waking the Heck Up. For links to the book and to Gary's bio, please check the links in the podcast or the show notes online at kgoradio.com.